now. You set me up, Locke said to Narya. You led me here, told me everything was ready. Narya shook her head. I didn't. You set me up. And with a sudden surge of violence, Locke pulled herself free from Jell's grasp. In a flash, she dove to the turf, grabbed the walking stick as she rolled back to her feet, and lunged as she slid the blade free. Narya flinched, but the strike wasn't aimed at her. The blade had been handed down through Westyke's family for generations. It was powerful enough to cut through the armor of the ancients. Locke's aim was perfect as she lunged at Lesagoras. The blade stopped an inch shy of the man's paladin band. At first, it seemed as though it had been stopped by some unseen barrier, but then the blade twisted in her hand.
It wasn't Narya, Lesagoras said. You see, you're human, and you're limited that way. In your mind, you threw Arica Eurici into that vat of acid, and you killed him. But we are not creatures of flesh and blood. All you threw into that vat of acid was an axe. We are tied to objects, the blade said, turning back toward Locke in her grasp, and its voice was terrible and familiar. Objects with the right alloy of metal. Objects like the sword given to Baron Westyke by the ancients themselves, Lesagoras said, smiling. Or like your good friend, Gilspower. Concomni altio seferis, Gilspower said, as his golem hopped down from the podium. In a flash, he had hold of Narya, and Gilspower himself was raised and ready to strike if Narya moved. No, indeed, Lesagoras agreed. No one need die, even if the tool carrying them is destroyed, as long as we can transfer ourselves into a new tool, quickly enough. Hello again, Captain Locke, said Arica Eurici, as he brought himself toward Locke's throat. Thank you so much for bringing me along on your little adventures. It has been such a pleasure watching you work. With an effort, Locke flung the blade to the ground, and as she did, Jell slammed into her from behind. Locke went down hard, the demon on top of her. Jell was shaped like a person, but she still weighed a lot more.
Now? Jell asked.
What do you think, Captain Locke? Lesagoras asked in amusement.
He looked up at the glimmering folk, now half a dozen in number, and all seeming to descend slowly toward the stadium, although with the way Locke's eyes seemed to slide off the edges whenever she looked at the creatures, it was impossible to be certain how quickly they were moving.
Would you rather die now, or after we heroically use the paladin bands to destroy the illusions that everyone here believes are the glimmering folk you summoned?
Locke struggled back to her knees. Jell didn't hold her down, but didn't especially help her up, either.
You let me get here, just for a show.
Behind her, the crowd was yelling, screaming in terror as everyone clawed for the exits.
So human, Lesagoras said sadly. So limited. Archvoy and Savart. Had you not come, Savart said, or had you come but failed in your attempt to modify our artifacts, the crystal seeding would have taken place as scheduled. I was instructed to watch and listen, Arica Eurici said, as Princess Veiled Lightning picked him up. But not to act. I could keep my superiors informed of your plans, sending magical messages that allowed them to use those plans to our advantage.
And in the unlikely event that you came up with a plan we couldn't use to our advantage, Veiled Lightning added. Arica Eurici would be there as a final defense.
You see, Lesagoras said, if you failed, Locke, we won. And if you succeeded, we won anyway.
He smiled at his compatriots.
We just sat back and enjoyed the show.
Locke bowed her head, shoulders slumped. When that show is over, she said, remember that I gave you a chance to walk away. The first of the glimmering folk extended a great tentacle overhead, and glimmering radiance raked the grounds with an impact that staggered everyone on the podium.
What in Bin Koldar's hell?
Lesagoras glared at the illusion in the sky as the crowd began screaming even louder. One of the paladins who held Mr. Dragon lash down for the benefit of the crowd released his lash and turned to send a blast of energy at the glimmering folk instead. The crimson energy crackled across the radiant surface of the creature, and a moment later, another blast of light rained down, sizzling into the paladin who had fired, and leaving only scorched ground in its wake.
They are real!
Veil! Princess Veiled Lightning shouted. Savert stepped back, touching studs on his paladin band rapidly and looking up at the thing overhead.
That's impossible! It's a trick! Arika Yorichi yelled. It's just another trick. An illusion killing an illusion. I heard her plan. I heard her entire plan.
Lesagoras had said nothing. His gaze was focused entirely on Locke. She looked up at him with a grim smile. Hey, Naria, she said without looking over. Didn't I leave my walking stick outside when I went in to talk with you? I wonder if I ever left it in another room, just for a minute, when I talked to the others. I wonder if I might have learned from how Gilspower played me last time. I wonder if maybe I fed the magical weapon with the aura my Death Priestess could see, a slightly different version of the plan. Lesagoras had gone pale, and he shook his head slowly as a glimmering folk growled overhead with a sound that made the earth tremble.
I will destroy you.
Now, Jell asked, and Locke said, now. With a roar, Jell leaped into the crowd of nobles, tearing and ripping with monstrous fury. Then, for the bad news, Ululenia snarled through great fangs as she slashed and tore at the demon in Westyke's manner. Is it I know exactly how you feel? The demon with Jell's memories howled in rage as she fell back from Ululenia's assault.
You know nothing!
Ululenia growled, and her horn flared as the vines that had grown through the room all sprouted great black thorns. I know the anger that rides you like a beast in your brain, she said. I know how it twists you into something you are not, making a mockery of your old life. You were simple as a demon, innocent as wildfire in your destruction. You were smart as Jell, cunning enough to be a worthy adversary. Now you are just the monster Locke rolls her eyes at. What part of you is happy at that?
I will kill her, the demon said, though it did not attack.
And will you be happy then? Ululenia asked through her fangs. Will that calm the foaming waters of your rage? Or will you just be the wolf, deprived of the only prey it cared to hunt? The demon paused.
What else can I do? It asked. What else can I be?
If you wish to let your spirit join the earth and become part of it, I can help that seed flourish and grow, Ululenia said quietly. If you wish to die, then the weapons best suited to end you are those of the ancients themselves. In either case, here is what I offer. Now,
keep the scrying pods showing everything that you can, Icy said, as he saw Skinner headed for them. I will deal with him.
Kael leaned against the console and nodded as Icy headed up the stairs. He'd come out of the rush of battle, and that whole broken arm thing was getting harder to ignore.
It appears that the creatures are aware of our attempts to broadcast this across the Republic, one of the puppeteers said. Everyone who can hear this, I'm sorry, I'm not sure how much longer we'll be able to keep going. No matter what happens, another puppeteer said. Don't trust anyone wearing a paladin band. Break them, if you can.
Please, said the third. They aren't your friends anymore. They're slaves of these ancients. Look at what's happening here. This is what they wanted. Relax, Kael said, more to himself than anyone else. Icy's kicking ass now. He can take one guy. Then, up overhead and outside, Kael had a flash of energy and a thump. Unless the guy is better at throwing energy blasts than Icy is at dodging them, Kael muttered. And with a sigh, sat up and headed for the damned ladder. In the Temple of Pesser on Heaven's Spire, Smith Lively fell to his knees as the entire room bucked and heaved. The anvil altar seemed to strain, glimmering light dancing around it, and then, with a groan, it settled in place, and a great rainbow radiance flared out from it in all directions.
No! Smith Lively shouted. You cannot! This! They said it was just an illusion! They promised me it would never be opened again!
Cold laughter sounded behind him. He turned slowly to see Desidora on her feet, beautiful and terrible in her pale fury.
We can close this, he said quickly. Before they... No!
He looked at the ground, squinting, as though he could see through the streets of the city itself.
No, they are already out. They...
Come now, Smith Lively, she chided.
What craftsman does not take pleasure in seeing his greatest creation in use? As he gaped at her, she struck, and her magic flung him across the temple and slammed him against the wall. But I disagree with you, she said as she walked to the altar. Your gate is impressive, but it is not your greatest creation. The bands you likely had a hand in as well, but it is not them either. With a silent prayer no god could hear, Desidora put her hands on the altar and felt the magic she'd placed there, the magic that had drawn the beam shot from the ground through the crystal underside of Heaven's Spire and here to the gate where it opened what had once been closed. She heard Lively struggling to his feet, and she looked inside that magic, looked to the gate itself. The underside of the city was the exit point for the glimmering folk, but Lively had used the anvil, which meant that it was possible. Not likely, not easy, but possible. She reached in with the cold power of death, plunging a hand into the dark waters of another world. It took power beyond measure to reach such a distance, through such a barrier, and she felt her skin warm, saw the fallen strands of her hair lighten to auburn, as every mote of her power stretched out, grasping, reaching. Lively was charging behind her, roaring in rage. Please, she prayed. Please. A hand grasped hers. She pulled. Her pale green dress swirled as she turned. And a great blast of glimmering rainbow power staggered Smith Lively, stopping the blow that would have killed Desidora. It flickered out of the room and was gone in an instant. And where it was, there stood Derry. This is your greatest creation, Desidora said to Lively. A good-hearted young man who has surpassed you in every conceivable way. Lively's pale face went still with rage, and he lunged at Desidora. Derry caught the blow with one hand, catching it before it struck.
No, sir, he said. I created you, Lively snarled. You think to use your magical strength against me?
Lively's aura twisted around him, and then, with a little pop, his paladin band fell off.
Oh, thank the gods. I was hoping he would do that, Desidora said as it hit the floor.
Sister? Derry asked. They banded me, Pyvek asked, blinking and looking around. Damn it.
When I saw him hurt you, Derry, I got a glimpse of the magic he used to nullify your powers, Desidora said. I thought that if he tried it again, I could twist it against his band.
Then she leaped forward and pulled Derry into a hug.
Thank you for coming back, he flushed.
Thank you for reaching out for us. Us? Pyvek asked.
Desidora wasn't listening. Lively was down. Her death aura was safely around her, just in case he had any more traps readied. The gate had been opened. What mattered now was finding another way to hurt the ancients. They could hurry back to the transport rune at the palace. She could find Gil's power. She could look at him in the moment the glimmering folk laid waste to his world. Could let him see how it felt to be played for a fool. She could.
Sister Desidora, Derry asked. You're still very pale.
And that was how it got you, she realized, and let the death aura go and became a love priestess again.
Thank you, Derry, she said, smiling at him.
Then she blinked. Derry's aura was next to impossible to track, but she saw something in it. She'd never have seen it with the death aura. It wasn't energy or power or corruption or anything like that. It was something that mattered so much more. Something only a love priestess could see.
We need to get you down to the ground, she said, and turned to Pyvek. And while we go, you need to, she squinted. You need to send Locke a message.
Pyvek blinked.
I suspect she's pretty busy, sister, and I doubt she needs to.
Desidora leaned in and rapped her knuckle on his forehead.
The two of you, she said, and sighed. Need. You're allowed to want. Come on.
She took both of them by the hand and started running. And as she did, she said a tiny silent prayer to the goddess who pointed the way for lovers. The two hunter golems kicked the door open.
For your crimes against the ancients, one of them said. You must die.
A bolt thunked into his helmet, and a moment later a pouch of glittering powder followed it, and the hunter stumbled back, twitching, and then collapsed. The other hunter lunged forward, its spear slashing Tern's crossbow from her hands. It stepped past Westyke, who had pressed himself back against the wall, and raised the spear to Tern's throat.
"Yes, kill her," Westyke said. "Then we'll need to summon someone who can undo the damage she's done."
The hunter looked over at Westyke, though its spear was still pressed just below Tern's chin.
"Your loyalty is uncertain."
Westyke raised his now bare arm.
"Listen, my paladin band was damaged in battle."
"You asshole," Tern said with incredible sincerity, without turning her head, as a spear point drew a drop of blood just below her chin. To the hunter, she added, "You may want to get back to the gate room. It's about to be crawling with glimmering folk trying to get into the ancient's world." The hunter paused.
"Explain." "She's bluffing," Westyke said. "It's another bluff. That's what they do. They lie and do tricks and con people, but it's always a bluff."
"We opened the gate to the Shadowlands," Tern said, pointing at the crystal lattice. "They're pouring down from Heaven's Spire right now. What's the top speed on a giant flying rainbow octopus monster from hell, anyway?"
"They will not come to the gate," the hunter said. "The glimmering folk never showed an interest in the world of the ancients before. Even if they did, the gate is safely underground. The glimmering folk die upon making contact with the ground."
"The gate was safely underground," Tern said, "until your bosses dug a big hole that let someone go down through the font on the surface all the way to the gate without touching the earth."
As a spear dug in a little bit deeper, she added,
"But then they might not be able to find it, would they? Unless someone told them what to look for."
Then,
"Oh dear," Hessler said, as the impossible form of the glimmering man uncoiled and came toward him. "Listen, we're fighting the ancients, and I understand that the two of you didn't really get along. Although it seems to have been a case of rulership versus consumption, and..."
"Yes," said the glimmering man. "They tasted better than you, but we never found them."
"The gate, you mean," Hessler said, thinking quickly, even as his head began to throb. "But if you did find it, if you came through your gate and could sense the gate that led to their world, perhaps if it had an oral signature similar to your own, would you be willing to go through it instead of staying in my world?"
"Perhaps," the glimmering man said with a shrug. If, but it does not matter, because we are trapped here."
"It is possible," said Hessler, with the same care that he had used during his first demon-summoning ritual, "that we could make that happen."
"Or you could stay here with me," said the glimmering man. "Here is now."
Hessler winced, suspecting what staying here meant for him.
"If I do that, I cannot help you get in."
The glimmering man focused on Hessler again, suddenly alert.
"We want in."
"Now."
"You caused this," the hunter said. "Your team."
"We did," Tern said. "And if you kill me, you lose any chance of figuring out what I did to your gate to slap a false glamour aura on top of it, like a big old beacon for the glimmering folk."
"It's just another trick," Westyke said. "Only the weak-minded fall for such obvious ploys."
"Are you sure you should be worried about me?" Tern asked. "And not the guy who is no longer wearing a paladin band, but still has crazy powerful magical armor?"
"He will be apprehended non-lethally once you are dead," the hunter said, "as his loyalty remains unclear. And I will be happy to cooperate fully as a loyal ally of the ancients," Westyke said, nodding repeatedly with a confident smile that would have looked completely at home on the face of a mid-level guild member with earnest opinions about next season's turnip prices. "Lysagoras trusted me to capture you all before. He put those tracker creatures in my care."
Tern blinked. "The ogre and the scorpion and the troll?"
"Yes," Westyke said. "And although he made a regrettable decision to have me controlled with a band, I'm certain that once I show him how I stopped you here, he will see that I deserve..."
"Now, use the golem bane powder,"
Tern shouted, and turned her head away. The golem moved, and the spear was away from her throat, and Tern opened her eyes immediately and got to see the hunter's spear slam through Westyke's unarmored forehead. The hunter pulled its spear free, and Westyke, looking very surprised and very dead, slid slowly to the ground. The hunter paused, then turned back to her, bringing its spear back to her throat in a blur of motion.
"He does not have golem bane powder," it said. You were lying.
Honest mistake, Tern said, and smiled, though tears stung her eyes. Don't beat yourself up about it.
Something outside exploded, and the hunter stood back for a moment, its spear drawing away from Tern's throat. There was a roar, as metal hinges shrieked and tore away. It sounded like there was a voice under the roar, or in the roar, or of the roar, and it said something that sounded to Tern like,
89.
Regardless, the hunter's spear was away from her throat, and Tern went for the acid flask at her belt, and her hand closed around it, just as a metal gauntlet closed over her hand.
No, the hunter said. The new threat will be dealt with once you are dead.
Something crashed out in the mine, and there was a sound like a lot of crystal breaking, and another roar, and this one sounded like
90.
Tern shoved hard with her steel-toed boots, and the hunter stumbled off balance, and Tern got the acid flask free and threw it, but the hunter stepped to one side, and the flask crashed into the wall behind it, sizzling against the wall, and the hunter's spear came up.
Die with honour, the hunter said,
and Tern shut her eyes and put Hessler in her mind. If the gods were kind, at least she'd see him soon. And with a great burst of glimmering rainbow light, something slammed into the hunter with a blast that ripped through the golem and then solidified instead of dissipating, the rainbow light coiling into a solid shape. It looked like the glimmering man, tall and muscular and swathed in rainbow light, so that the individual features were just shadows. And then it said, in a voice that broke Tern's heart,
91 seconds.
By the time Locke had gotten back to her feet, the demon Jell had already taken down two of the paladins with brutal efficiency. Lesigurus wasn't fighting her, though. He was coming toward Locke, fury mottling his fine, chiselled features. Princess Veiled Lightning was at his side, Arika Yorichi held in her grasp.
You have destroyed your world, Lesigurus snarled.
Actually, I've destroyed your world, Locke said. Or at least dinged it up a bit once the glimmering folk get through with it. They're headed for your gate now.
You filthy savage, Arika Yorichi said. Do you know how much blood will be on your hands?
Says the axe who wanted to blow up half the Republic. Locke rolled out her shoulders. Funny how when you boys were winning, you were all about survival of the fittest and deserving whatever you could take by force. Issa, Naria asked. Go. Naria flickered and disappeared in the grasp of the golem who had held her. And both the golem and Gilspower looked around.
Best in Larvis's? Gilspower asked in confusion. More tricks.
Lesigurus swallowed and held out a hand. Princess Veiled Lightning passed Arika Yorichi over.
They will not save you. Whatever happens, whatever destruction your little stunt causes, it will not keep you alive.
It's not about tricks, Locke said as Lesigurus advanced. Arika Yorichi held before him. Veiled Lightning guarded his back, clearly ready for Naria to return. And it's not about stunts. It's about people. They might be flawed, but when you understand them, you can find a way. Lesigurus raised Arika Yorichi to strike.
How noble of you.
I protect the people, Locke said, unmoving. I destroy the enemy. She held out her hand. And as Arika Yorichi came down, there was a flash of light, and with a perfect silvery peal, the great blow glanced away.
Concabnial Deus Aferis.
Locke held Gilspower up, smiled at Lesigurus, and said, And nobody will die while I watch.